Kia ora, welcome to Emerson's Podcast, episode 317. Today is Friday, February 26, 2016. Well, I have several things to tell you about today, some continuations of what I was mentioning last time, and also a few new things. But first, I wanted to talk about the upcoming flag referendum, because it is interesting. All of the polls are showing, and have shown for quite some time, that the current flag is going to win quite handily. And I've been saying that all along. I've been saying that, in a sense, it doesn't really matter, those of us who are voting for change, because we're not going to win. But that's not the point. I'm voting for change because I think we should change the flag, and I actually like the alternative flag that's been proposed. That's not necessarily the case with my fellow New Zealand voters. And there's a poll that was released on the 16th, by UMR Research. And it found that about two-thirds of the people who were likely to vote, very likely or pretty likely, two-thirds of them supported the current New Zealand flag. And that's in line with other polls. But what I found interesting about it is when you start drilling down in the details. And by the way, this is true for all public opinion polls. If you drill down in the details, you can find out some interesting things about your fellow citizens and so on. For instance, if you think about keeping a flag as opposed to changing it, what age group do you suppose to be the most likely to want to keep the current flag? Logic would say that it would be the older people, maybe over 60 or maybe over 50 or 40. No. The group that was most likely to want to keep the current flag is aged 18 to 29. And I find that astounding. And it sort of beggars belief. Why would young people be so keen to keep the current flag? And when you look at the next three age bands going up, 30 to 44, 45 to 59, and 60 plus, they're all pretty much the same. There's really nothing between them at all. But there's a 10-point gap between them and the 18 to 29-year-olds. And I think if you go over and look at the party identification, we start to see why that is. National voters, the National Party, of course, is the current party of government. The leader of the party, John Key, is also prime minister. He's behind this whole flag referendum. He early on expressed a preference for a silver fern design. He backed the two Kyle Lockwood designs, and then he chose the one that ultimately won the first referendum because he thought it was a nicer blue. Well, 50% of National Party supporters want to change the flag, and 50% want to keep it. Clean split, which is interesting. But it could very well be that because it's the National Party prime minister or leader who is proposing it, that he's getting more support from National than he otherwise would. That's a guess. On the other end of the spectrum, New Zealand First, only 17% want to vote for change and 83% want to keep the current flag. That also makes perfect sense because the demographic of the New Zealand First Party skews old. It's 65 plus, probably, 60s, 70s, and 80s. Is their primary membership base. They don't have a whole lot of people who are in the middle age or younger. It's just not their demographic. And so the fact that 83% of them want to keep the current flag, that makes perfect sense. But then you look at the Labour Party and the Green Party, and that they're very close to each other. 30% of Labour is going to vote to change. 70% of supporters are going to vote to keep the current flag. With the Greens, 32% favor the new flag, and 68% want to keep the current flag. And I think that's where we start to see the matchup between the age and party identification, because young people tend to support Labour and the Greens, not National, and certainly not New Zealand First. So the fact that they overwhelmingly want to keep the current flag is what is, I think, skewing the results of both Labour and the Greens, which is not to say that middle-aged and older Labour and Green supporters don't want to vote for the current flag as well. They probably do. Then the question becomes, why? Why do they want to vote to keep the current flag? And naturally, they've done some polling on that as well, as asking some questions. They ask people to rate how strongly they agreed or disagreed with this statement. Quote, "The flag referendum has been a distraction and a waste of money. New Zealanders should send John Key a message by voting for the current flag." And 53% of the people strongly agreed with that statement. 13% somewhat agreed. So an overall 66% agreed with that statement. Only 14% strongly disagreed. What that means is that the majority of these people who are going to vote for the current flag are going to do so because they want to send John Key a message. And that is not exactly a good reason to do that, I don't think. The thing is that John Key is desperately unpopular with a lot of people in New Zealand, except those who answer public opinion polls, because we've also seen a poll recently that found that his popularity ratings continue high. He continues as the preferred prime minister, which is kind of like a beauty contest between the various party leaders. And the National Party continues to ride high in the polls. The Labour has, I think, gone up one or held steady, I can't remember. The Greens have gone down, and New Zealand First has gone up in the most recent poll. And what that suggests to us is that John Key himself is not the issue in this, but it is to a certain group of people who want to use the flag referendum as a way of registering a protest against Key himself. And I am a strong advocate of people exercising their democratic rights and their right to free expression and all that sort of thing. I just don't think they should use a different process to register that message and that complaint. The fact that they despise John Key in the main is a well-known fact on the center and the left, especially the left. Everybody knows that. That's not a surprise. But the fact that they're willing to use something else to make that point, I think it's kind of childish, to be honest. If it was me, and I'm a huge opponent of John Key. I've never voted National since I've been eligible to vote, ever since I became a permanent resident and then citizen. I've never voted for the National Party, and I can't imagine that's going to change, certainly not anytime soon. But I am not going to use this referendum as a way of doing some sort of protest vote. If I wanted to protest, what I would do, this is me personally, is I would not vote at all. I wouldn't participate. And which is what a large number of people will end up doing, I would predict. At least a third of voters won't even bother to vote, probably more. Could be half of the voters won't bother. And this is a postal ballot, so it's not like it's any great effort to vote. And it's because they think the process is corrupt. They don't like how much money is being spent. Or maybe they don't like the design. There are a lot of reasons why people might not participate in the process. And there also are legitimate reasons to vote for the current flag. The people who prefer the current flag, the people who seem to think it's got some sort of historical whatever, you know, those could be legitimate reasons. But because you hate John Key, that's not a legitimate reason to vote for the current flag, in my opinion. Now, they did ask the question about, they asked people to agree or disagree with the statement, the current flag represents our tradition and history. New Zealanders have fought several wars under that flag and it should be respected. By the same margin, 66% disagreed with that statement. So I think that just provides more evidence that people are using the referendum as a way of making a political statement and not as an expression of how they feel about this particular flag. And actually, I know a lot of people personally who want change. They just hate this particular flag, this particular design, for whatever reason. And there's a lot of mockery going on among the opponents of that flag who don't necessarily want to keep the current flag, but they don't want the alternative either. And the thing about a flag change of any country is that it's always contentious. There are always people who hate the new design and people who love it. That's always the case. When Canada changed its flag, there were people who absolutely despised the maple leaf design, and now it is ubiquitous. You see it everywhere. So, you know, it's one of those things where the flag changes and people get used to it. And I don't know. But the thing is that they asked the people who were only for voting for change, for keeping the current New Zealand flag. They asked them the statement, in principle, I would like to change the flag, but I just do not like the alternative. And the clear majority there, very clear majority there, disagreed with that statement to some extent. Something like 64% disagreed with it, and another 16% neither agreed nor disagreed. But what that means is that only about a third, 29% of the people who were going to keep the current flag said that only 29% of the people who were voting to keep the current flag were saying that they would like to change it, but they don't like the alternative. What that means is that the majority of the people who are voting for the current flag are doing so apparently because they like the current flag. That's inconsistent with what they say earlier about wanting to send John Key a message. So I'm tending not to believe them when they say that. I mean, it is possible that there's overlap. There's people who like the current flag and they want to send John Key a message. That's always possible. But I don't know. All of those questions, by the way, they've drilled down into, they've broken them down by categories. For instance, the one I just said, in principle, I like to change the flag and so on. They break that down by male and female, by age group, by party ID, and so on. And so it makes interesting reading, I suppose, if nothing else. The thing about public opinion polls is that you have to know how they were conducted, the method that they used. You have to know knowing the sample size is good, but it's actually not as critical as a lot of people seem to think it is. You don't get a whole lot of accuracy by going from 500 to 1,000 or from 1,000 to 2,000. There's very little increase in accuracy because these are all built around mathematical models, which are constantly evaluated and constantly adjusted as needed to keep them accurate. But you do need to know the margin of error and what's called the confidence level. And if the margin of error is under 4%, it's pretty good. If it's up to, if it's 4.5 or above, then it's starting to get a bit dodgy. But still, it could be all right. It could be reasonably good. The confidence level matters. 95% or up is pretty good. And you have to consider the track record of the polling organization itself. UMR Research, in this case, has a reasonably good track record of conducting solid studies. Not necessarily accurate all the time. I mean, no polling organization is accurate 100% of the time, ever. And so there are ways of looking at polling data to work out how valid it is. And in this case, I think it's pretty valid. Now, this week, this past Monday, was the observation of the 5th anniversary of the Christchurch earthquakes that killed 185 people. And it was a big deal. You may have seen in the news how on Waitangi Day, there was a dildo that was flung at Stephen Joyce up in Waitangi. However, in Christchurch, Jerry Brownlee, who's the minister in charge of earthquake recovery or some such thing, he's the MP for Ilam, he had a brown substance thrown on him. And that's been controversial for a whole lot of reasons. The guy who did it is apparently a bit dodgy. I've seen him on TV. He doesn't seem like he's playing with the full deck for a variety of reasons. None the least of which is that his son was killed on the bus in that earthquake. He was sitting on a bus going to school or from school or something, and the earthquake hit, and the building that the bus was next to collapsed on top of the bus and killed him. So, you know, he's got issues with the lack of response, and he's also suffered terrible loss, and perhaps he could have benefited with some counseling support. And ironically enough, that same week, or just a few days before, the government announced that it was cutting something like $38 million from the mental health care budget for the Canterbury region, which is, of course, where Christchurch is. So what that means is that people who are still dealing with the stress and trauma of that earthquake and the recovery are going to find fewer resources to help them cope. This is not a good thing. Also, the recovery has been painfully slow. There has been some rebuilding going on, but there's a lot that's just absolutely stalled. And there are a fairly large number of people who have not yet settled with their insurance company, particularly in the so-called red zone, which is areas that are supposed to be bought out, and they're supposed to, then the land is supposed to be made vacant, basically, until such time as they determine it's safe to build on or something. I don't know. At any rate, a lot of these people have not settled. I think it's about 5% still are waiting for a payout from their insurance company 5 years later. And that's not acceptable. And I don't understand how the government can have allowed that situation to go on for this long without intervening. But be that as it may, that's the way it is. And so it was a fairly solemn occasion on that day. There were a lot of observances in Christchurch, as you can imagine. And next year, the observance will be held in a special memorial park that is being constructed. And it'll be taken over by a memorial commission. It's been led by the mayor of Christchurch for all these years. And starting next year, it'll be more of an ongoing memorial and observance. So, yeah, that was in our news this week. And those are kind of the only real news items I wanted to talk about this week. It's still summer, and there's not that much going on. And so, you know, there's not that much to tell you about in terms of news or politics or government or anything. And the only other thing I would add is that the government is about to start this roadshow trying to sell the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement to Kiwis, who are overwhelmingly opposed to it. So this should be interesting. They're spending about $500,000 on these roadshows, apparently. I would suspect it's probably two or three times that, with the costs, you know, just absorbed in budgets and things, not as line items. But, and I don't know how successful it's going to be. There will be protests wherever these things are held. I'm quite certain of that. They're going to have public meetings throughout the country, and I'm certain there will be protests outside a great many of them, especially in the larger cities. And they're not going to be able to convince the ordinary public. Not that it matters, because they can just do what they want. And if the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement is to be stopped, it will require the U.S. Congress to reject it. At this point, that's probably the only hope for stopping the agreement from coming into force in a few years' time. And that's the sad truth of it. We don't get a say. It's not like that. So on to other news. I said last time that I was going back to the doctor to get the results of my tests. And the results were all in, much to my surprise, after the experience with the sample collection. Everything was fine. And the results were okay-ish. And I guess you could say I'm making progress-ish on getting healthier. I last had blood tests about 4 years ago. I saw the doctor 2 years ago, but I didn't get around to getting the blood test. I don't want to talk about that. I just didn't get around to it. And so all I can compare to is where I was 4 years ago. And 4 years ago, I actually talked about it on the podcast, and I said that my good cholesterol was bad, my bad cholesterol was worse, and it was all a mess or something like that. I can't remember how I put it. And that's not as true as it was. My good cholesterol is a bit low. It's not dramatically low, it's just a bit low. And she said that I could increase that through exercise. And my bad cholesterol is a bit high. Again, it's not like, oh my God, high. It's a bit high. But because of my good cholesterol being low, that means that the ratio of good cholesterol to my overall cholesterol is high. And they talked about, she mentioned statins in passing, which I'm not going on, but we didn't go down that road because it's not high enough to panic about. But here's what I think is interesting. When I did have those blood tests 4 years ago, they were considerably worse. And I haven't made a lot of dramatic changes since then. As a matter of fact, I've gained weight since that time 4 years ago, I think. I'd have to check that, actually. I'm not sure if that's true. I know I have since 2 years ago, but I don't know about 4 years ago. At any rate, I haven't started a whole lot of exercise. I haven't really changed anything except for one thing. 2 years ago, I started taking fish oil capsules. 3,000 milligrams a day, just the standard amount that they recommend, and my cholesterol levels are better. Now, I mentioned before the tests, I mentioned to the doctor that I was taking these, and she said that the problem was that there wasn't conclusive evidence that they actually help. And that's true. There is not conclusive evidence, but there's evidence. And I seem to be living evidence, living proof, that it is beneficial for at least for some people. Maybe it doesn't work for everybody. Maybe it's not predictable. Maybe there are other factors involved that I don't know about or we don't know about. But for me, it does seem to have been helpful. So I'm certainly not going to stop them now. However, I do need to get more exercise, and I am starting to lose weight. I lost about 1.5 kilos over the past week or so. So that's good. And just start to kind of get things whipped into shape. And so, yeah, it's progress-ish. I still have a lot more work to do, a long way to go, but it's encouraging, and I'm also pleased that I'm not as bad as I was last time the tests were done, I should say, because also one of the things they said at that time was that I was pre-diabetic. Well, this time my blood glucose tests were completely normal. There's absolutely nothing wrong with anything else either, except I do have unusually high iron levels for some reason, and they don't know why. They think it could be genetic. And when I got home, I remembered that I've been taking a multivitamin every day for years and years. and it has a couple of milligrams of iron in it, which isn't much, but if I'm prone to having high iron anyway, then, you know, that could be just enough to push it up. Because, as you probably know, the only way to lose iron is to bleed, and men don't generally bleed, and so we don't generally have a problem with iron, unless there's something else going on. And so this is something that they're going to be monitoring. It's not necessarily a cause for concern at this stage. And the only reason we found this out is we were double-checking to make sure I wasn't anemic. And that ended up, we ended up finding out it was the opposite. So that was kind of interesting. But all my other tests are normal, PSA and glucose and, you know, all the other blood tests that they do were all perfectly normal. My blood pressure has been a bit high for actually years. The doctor's concerned that it could just be a white coat effect, as it's called, when you go to a doctor's office or whatever, and you're tense, and so when they check your blood pressure, it's high. So she has put me on a blood pressure medication, very low dose, and just to see, you know, what that does over the next few weeks. She only gave me a month's supply. She says she thinks she's going to have to increase it, but I would suspect that in a month's time, pardon me, I have to cough. That's better. I would suspect that in a month's time, I will have lost weight, and hopefully that will have affected my blood pressure favorably, so I won't need an increase. But I don't know. We'll find out when that time comes. The joys of growing older, eh? There are just so many. And finally today, something I didn't mention at all last time, and that is that yesterday, or today in the U.S., because today is February 25, in the U.S. of A., as I'm recording, was my dad's 100th birthday, or would have been. I guess it still is. Yeah. He has been gone for about a third of that, more than a third of that time. However, I still remember it every year, and it is kind of freaky to think that I'm somebody who... I am from somebody who was born 100 years ago, a century ago. It just sounds weird. And, of course, in my mind's eye, he's the same age he was when I last saw him, just before he died. So, you know, it seems a bit surreal. And I've blogged about this, and I'll put a link in the show notes to that for anybody who's interested in reading about what I said. It turned out it was the first time I've ever blogged about my dad's birthday, and it wasn't intentional that I didn't, although I talk about that in the post as well. It's just one of those things that just didn't happen. And, you know, what can I say? I just didn't. And now I have. Meanwhile, it continues to be summer, and it has been a very hot summer this year for some reason. And for at the moment, as I'm recording this, the temperature at our house is 35.7 degrees, which is 96.26 in Fahrenheit degrees. And it's a little bit hotter than it's been, but that's not unusual lately. But what's worse is that because of the humidity and whatnot, it feels like 44 degrees, which is 111.2 Fahrenheit. And of course, that would be exposed, not necessarily in the shade and all that sort of stuff, I'm sure, the feels like. But it's still, however you slice it, it's been hot. And even the official temperatures, which is considerably cooler than that, the official temperature, I think, is at the moment, it's about 25 degrees, which is 77. So there's a huge difference between the official temperature and what you're likely to measure anywhere. So that is a bit of a slice of life here in my New Zealand, my little corner of New Zealand. And that is it for today, and that is it for this week. I'll talk to you soon. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye.
You can comment on this or any episode of the Amerinds Podcast at amerindspodcast.com, where you can also leave a voice message. You can send me an audio message through Audioboo or Skype, where my username is Amerinds, and you can email me, with or without a voice message, at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amerindspodcast.com. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.